It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It was a case that began in December of 2005 when the advocacy group Lambda Legal filed a suit on behalf of six same-sex couples here in Iowa. They had applied for marriage licenses in the office of the Polk County Recorder, and in accordance with Iowa law of that time, their applications were denied. In August 2007, Polk County District Court Judge Robert Hansen ruled in the plaintiff's favor. Then, on this date in 2009, April 3rd, Supreme Court of Iowa ruled upholding Hansen's decision, and that decision made Iowa the third state to allow same-sex couples to marry. Fast forward 5 years later to the present, 2014, 17 states now sanction same-sex marriage. Several others allow civil unions. And also in the meantime, the U.S. Supreme Court decision that ruled a federal same-sex marriage ban was unconstitutional. This hour, we want to mark the Varnum decision by taking a look at how public and political attitudes on same-sex marriage have shifted in the past 5 years. We'd like to have you help us as listeners to River to River, and having this in your living memory, very likely. Have your views on same-sex marriage changed since that decision, the Varnum decision, 5 years ago? Are you in a same-sex relationship? What changes have you noticed in living in day-to-day in our society? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, where you can leave a comment or a question, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us to lead off this hour, Kate Varnum, the lead plaintiff in the Iowa Supreme Court case that we're marking this hour, Varnum v. Breen. Kate and her wife, Trish, have been together since January of 2001. They married legally in September of 2009 and were among that first batch of an estimated 4,500 same-sex couples to marry in the state after the Varnum ruling. Kate Varnum, welcome back to our program.
Thank you.
Okay. Can you recall that day for us? I'm sure you've recalled it many times, but tell us what stands out most in your memory the day the decision was handed down.
You know, the thing that stands out the most for me was the absolute joy that not only Trish and I had, but the other plaintiffs, everyone involved in the case, and all of our family and friends had, because this was – we understood that this was historic. This was a monumental decision, not just for Iowa, but for the country.
Mm-hmm. Was it expected? It was a unanimous decision, but was it something you and Trish expected?
We didn't expect to have a decision quite so quickly. We had oral arguments in December of 2008, and we didn't expect a decision until later in the year of 2009. To have it come early in April was a surprise to us, and to have it be unanimous was an absolute thrill.
What did you do that day?
What did we do that day? Well, aside from several press conferences and talking with reporters, we floated. We absolutely floated through the day. I don't remember driving home from Des Moines to Cedar Rapids. I just remember floating. That was a wonderful feeling.
Okay. Let's talk about the intervening 5 years. What changes have you noticed for you and your wife, Trish, living in our society in Iowa, the third state to allow same-sex marriage in the past 5 years? What difference does it make?
It adds a legitimacy to our relationship. Marriage is the highest form of respect, of recognition that our society offers to couples. And to be able to say that we're married adds a real honesty to our relationship, a real recognition to our relationship.
When you say legitimacy, paint that. Fill that in with sort of day-to-day experiences that make that legitimacy count.
I can introduce Trish as my wife. Before the decision, I introduced her as my partner. Before that, I even introduced her as my roommate because of the homophobia that we thought we were experiencing in Iowa. Being able to introduce her as my wife not only legitimizes our relationship to each other, but it also points out to people that, yes, we are a committed couple and we are committed to our relationship to each other.
Mm-hmm. Do you get any interesting reactions when you introduce Trish as your wife?
There are some reactions, but most of the time people understand what a spouse is and they understand the importance that the terms husband or wife has.
I guess in the 5 years, a short time, is the reaction when you say that, become more commonplace or matter of fact?
It is more matter of fact, and I'm really proud of Iowa for coming around on the issue.
Mm-hmm. Do you face opposition among any people that you encounter who make it clear to you they do not believe you and Trish should be married?
Not in our day-to-day life. I know that there are people who disagree with our relationship, but we don't involve them in our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm. You and Trish adopted a baby boy in 2011.
Yes, we did. His name is Alex, and he's 2.5 now, and he is our absolute joy. The great thing is, you know, at 2.5, he doesn't have an understanding of what's going on with his parents' relationship and their role in this decision. He introduces us as Mama and Mommy, and that's what's important to him.
One is Mama, one is Mommy.
One is Mama, one is Mommy, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, did the adoption process run smoothly?
It did in Iowa. In Iowa, we were able to adopt him jointly, as any other married couple would be able to do.
Mm-hmm. Was this hinged on Varnum, or did it preclude Varnum?
Because we were able to be married, we could adopt him jointly. If we were not married, we would have had to do concurrent adoptions. However, in Texas, where he was born, we were told that we had to choose a mother for his birth certificate because
his biological parents were in Texas, or that's where he was for adoption.
Where he was born.
Okay.
It was actually a kinship adoption, so there is a legal relationship there already. And we were told by Texas that we needed to choose a mother after our adoption went through in Iowa because they won't put two mothers on a birth certificate.
And that's what you ended up doing.
That's what we ended up doing. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Kate Varnum is with us, lead plaintiff in the Iowa Supreme Court case Varnum v. Breen. We're marking that this day, the 5-year anniversary of that landmark decision. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, or especially looking at the way perhaps your views on same-sex marriage have changed in these short 5 years. Perhaps you're in a same-sex relationship. Perhaps your views have not changed. Perhaps this is something you don't feel is good for Iowa, for the nation. 1-866-780-9100. Bruce Gronbeck is joining us as well, along with Kate Varnum. Bruce Gronbeck, you'll hear him on our Politics Wednesdays regularly. He's Emeritus Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Iowa, has for decades studied political rhetoric, joining us now by phone. Hi, Bruce.
How are you doing? I'm fine.
Great to have you on our program. You listened to Kate Varnum talk about that historic day and the difference it's made in her life and her family's life. Zoom out for us. Talk about the changes that you have observed in the past 5 years, not only in Iowa, but across the country.
Well, I mean, I think for me, one of the most interesting aspects of this is the degree to which Iowa became a particular kind of bellwether state in the move towards same-sex marriages. I mean, what you tended to get nationally was a phrase like, even Iowa is making this move. I think it was stunning in many ways to various sorts of movements across the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially on both coasts, there had been strong work in that period on trying to get same-sex legislation passed. Very few were using the courts at that point. Most were trying legislative initiatives. And then along comes Iowa. The court makes a decision. The state doesn't fall apart. It goes on and takes it in stride and moves forward. And Iowa then becomes this singular sort of place inside the middle of the country, thought to be, of course, just terribly social conservative and backward but in so many parts of the country. And yet here the move is being made. So Iowa becomes very important in the national move. And Jon Stewart couldn't stop talking about it on The Daily Show. At least once a month you'd hear him say something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we moved, you know, toward there were ballot initiatives coming up in 2010, already being prepared, it was very important nationally, and it still is talked about as a pioneer site.
Mm-hmm.
The court decision, and I'll leave maybe talking about the court decision, the way it was framed as well. highly important move as it attempts to pull the whole decision out of a matter of same-sexness and into a matter of civil rights.
Bruce Gronbeck with us, professor of communication studies at the University of Iowa, now emeritus. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. A big question here, let me throw it to both of you, but to Kate Varnum, first of all. Is this a civil rights issue? What qualifies it as a civil rights issue?
It's a human rights issue because we're seeking equal recognition in our marriages. You know, my brother, when he got married, was bestowed upon him all of these rights and recognitions. And all that we sought for our relationship was the same rights and recognitions that they have.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, on that question of civil rights, human rights?
Well, yeah, the court itself, I mean, the sentence that jumps out of the decision is that our responsibility, however, is to protect constitutional rights of individuals from legislative enactments that have denied those rights, even when the rights have not yet been broadly accepted. And if that move to cast it as a rights question that begins then to hook it up with all of the other rights movements that the country had been going through from Brown versus the Board of Education on in the mid-50s. I mean, these are deeper issues in the history of Iowa, but that period from the mid-50s on, as you move through a series of different civil rights, this became just the next step in that progression. And in the process, then, it pretty well begins to negate a series of other matters of its relationship to religious beliefs, of its relationship even to some of the other sorts of arguments that were being made, perversions and all that kind of thing. And to take that firm stand on civil rights made opposition to it much, much more difficult than it was before then.
Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. What does this day, the fifth anniversary of the Varnum decision that allows same-sex marriage in Iowa since 2009, what does this day mean to you? Have your views on same-sex marriage changed since Varnum? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or message us on our Facebook page. Let's go to some phone calls. Jackie with us from Anamosa. Your thoughts on this day?
Hi. I am just really proud to have moved to Iowa 7 years ago. I'm in a long-term relationship, over 18 years, with my current girlfriend. And we were able to adopt a little girl last July in July. And there were no records on the books that disallowed us both from adopting the little girl that we adopted. Neither of us are the birth mother. And Iowa permitted both of us to be on the birth certificate for our little girl. And it was an amazing moment. We were both extremely afraid that, you know, we'd have to each file our petitions to adopt. But since there was nothing on the record book that disallowed it, we were both put on her birth certificate, and it's just wonderful to live in a state where we're accepted we're a normal American family.
Where did you move from, Jackie?
We moved from Greensboro, North Carolina.
I thought I heard a little lilt in there, too. So this would be seen differently in North Carolina than in Iowa.
Well, North Carolina, of course, they probably would not allow us both to be on the birth certificate. Your guest was saying, in Iowa, she thought that they had to be married, or because they were married, it was allowed. But we were not married, and we struggle with that, actually, from week to week, whether we should get married, because, you know, it's not recognized by the Social Security Administration, and that would be one of the key reasons for us at this point to get married. I've recently petitioned to have my last name changed to the same last name as my daughter and her other mother. Basically, you know, for my child, when I go pick her up, I want the same last name. But since marriage precludes us from the Social Security benefits, we have decided to hold off until, you know, that time comes. At this point, we just inherit each other's debt.
Okay. Jackie and Anamosa, thank you for sharing as part of you, with us part of your story.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right. 1-866-780-9100. Jackie alluded to this, Kate Varnum. What stands out there as you see still in the way nationally of same-sex couples who are married?
I think what stands out nationally is the fact that there's still kind of a patchwork of laws across the country. You know, there are several borders on Iowa that we cross and we're not married anymore. For a long time, Iowa was kind of this island of equality until Minnesota and Illinois started passing marriage laws.
Mm-hmm. In the Midwest?
In the Midwest.
Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois have same-sex legality. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin, Missouri, Nebraska have constitutional bans, I believe.
Exactly. So there are several borders where we cross that we just say to each other, yay, it's been nice being married to you. So we're no longer married in those states.
Mm-hmm. Bruce Gronbeck, let's talk about the GOP. And you've been following, I think, the shift in the Republican Party, which has traditionally been against same-sex marriage and today remains opposed to same-sex marriage in its latest platform in 2012. What shifts do you see there?
Well, the big pressure, it seems to me, on the Republican Party right now is the shift in public attitudes. The latest poll that came out of Pew says, where over two-thirds of those polled see same-sex marriage, same-sex unions as inevitable. They may not still fully endorse them personally, but they see them inevitable, and that means that there is a strong drop in resistance to the idea. If not only are people then generally becoming more over half now in favor, but if even larger percentage thinks it's inevitable, it's putting just tremendous pressure on the Republican Party to make a move. It's going to have to at least endorse some sort of civil union sort of measure. So here is one of the areas of pressure on the party. It seems to me another area was alluded to in the caller with the question of federal benefits, and if we can get then a series of federal benefits moved over and taken care of legislatively for same-sex couples, then there will also be pressure on the state parties to do the same sort of thing. I mean, one of the big issues in a lot of places is the matter of health insurance, and that becomes a state issue largely that's important to be taken care of, that is still causing even legally married same-sex couples difficulties. So there are also a series of state issues that the party is going to face a tremendous pressure on to say, well, if we allow these couples to be married, then why can't we allow them to have economic and health and other sorts of benefits?
Bruce Gronbeck with us, along with Kate Varnum. We're looking back, marking the fifth anniversary of the Varnum decision, which allowed Iowa to become the third state in the union to allow same-sex marriage. Call from Hiawatha. Is it Damon?
Yeah.
Damon, welcome to our program. Well, you have a different view.
Well, my view is I'm an evangelical Christian. I don't necessarily agree with gay marriage, but, you know, the law is what it is. But you know what? My religious background says that God loves everyone. I mean, it's us who separate ourselves from God, not God who separates himself from us. And I guess the thing that I was looking at is that even though I, you know, say, hey, I love you, I don't agree with you, but I love you, mm-hmm. I do get hate from people in the gay community or people who are supportive of the gay community and specifically marriage, I guess I should say, when they hear my stance. Is that ever going to change for me to be able to have an opinion and still love somebody?
So what specific reactions have you gotten from people in your community there in Hiawatha?
Hate, anger. I mean, they think that I'm a hate monger because I don't agree with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I say hey, I love you, I just don't agree with you. And they say, no, you know, you're a hater, and because of that, you get pilloried, you know, sitting down for dinner with a group of people, and, you know, a couple of people got up left.
Yeah, I guess, can you say, I love you, but I don't accept your ways? Does that work?
No, I can't. And that's part of the problem, is that I've tried to vocalize that, and I just tried to figure out, you know, as far as this goes, that, I mean, for me, there's a lot of things with people that I don't love you, that I don't accept your ways, you know. My uncle, I love you, but I don't accept the fact that you're a certain way, you know, whether he is born that way or whether he was that way by nurture. I mean, it doesn't matter, but I guess I'm just trying to figure out when some of the hate is going to end.
Okay. Thanks, Damon, calling from Hiawatha. We're coming up on a break, but we're going to be saying goodbye to Kate Varnum here. Respond to the religious side of this, Kate Varnum, because we'll talk in the second half hour with Chuck Hurley of the Family Leader. How do you respond to when people feel that faith-wise this just doesn't work for them?
You know, when Trish came out to her dad, Trish grew up in Texas herself, and her dad was an old Texas good old boy, and she came out to him, and he said, does it change who you are? And she told him, no, sir, it does not. Well, there you go, he said. And her reaction is, if my father can love me that way, what says God doesn't love me in the same way? Mm-hmm. Trish and I are both very active members of our church. Our church, the Episcopal Church, has dealt with this issue for several years, but I think by us being visible in our own parish, people are seeing that we are a family. You know, they have watched Alex grow up. They watched me grow up because this is the church that I grew up in. Once people have a little bit more interaction, they may not understand the issue as well, but they understand the people behind it.
Okay, Kate Varnum, I want to thank you for coming into our studio today. Lead plaintiff in the Iowa Supreme Court case Varnum v. Breen, announced 5 years ago. Soon after that, the first same-sex marriages were allowed in Iowa. First batch, some 4,500 couples were married. Kate Varnum and her wife, Trish, were among the first of those. Kate Varnum, thank you again for sharing your story and how things have changed.
Thank you.
Bruce Gronbeck, please stay with us as we continue our conversation. When we come back, Jeff Angelo will be with us, former Iowa State Senator, also founder of Iowa Republicans for Freedom, also Chuck Hurley, president of the Family Policy Center, with some differing opinions there. We hope you'll join us with your opinion. 1-866-780-9100, marking the Varnum decision 5 years later. Back in just a moment. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, it's a Friday News Buzz edition. There are a number of topics we'll get to, including, do you know this name? David Skorton. We'll talk with him. He will become Secretary of the Smithsonian Institute later this year, former president of the University of Iowa. You might even remember, some of you out there, his public radio jazz show, As Night Falls, on some of the Iowa public radio frequencies. We'll be talking with David Skorton tomorrow, the Secretary of the Smithsonian Institute next year. David Skorton tomorrow on this program, a News Buzz edition. Today, we're marking the fifth anniversary of the Varnum decision, a decision that made Iowa the third state to allow same-sex couples to marry. Now 17 states sanction same-sex marriage, others allowing civil unions. We're tracking how public and political attitudes on same-sex marriage have shifted, and we'd like to have you join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk as well. In fact, to start off this half hour, I wanted to share, if I can find it, I'll have to share that a little bit. No, here it is, a Facebook comment from one of our listeners, Solara, a woman. She writes this on our Facebook page. 5 years ago today, I was standing in a park with a gay friend who I liked. I was still very internally homophobic and Mormon. I remember my reaction to the decision, the Varnum decision. It wasn't a happy one. Now I live directly across from that park with my beautiful wife. That's from Solara. Joining us now, we have, for continuing from our first half hour, Bruce Gronbeck, Emeritus Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Iowa, joining us by phone. But a couple of other new guests. Chuck Hurley is with us, President of the Family Policy Center, former President of the Family Leader, President of that organization at the time of Varnum, I believe. Chuck Hurley, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
And Jeff Angelo is with us, former Iowa State Senator. He served from 97 to 2009, a Republican, also founder of Iowa Republicans for Freedom. Jeff is also a Christian and a conservative. Jeff Angelo, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me today.
Let's go to you first, Chuck Hurley. 5 years on, your view, I understand, has not changed. You are as steadfast in your opposition to same-sex marriage as you were 5 years ago?
I believe that God's design for marriage predated government and will post-date government. So, yeah, I think he knew best, and we are foolish to try to redefine something that we have no authority to redefine. So absolutely. And he loves us, and that's why he set up marriage the way he did.
But given that the Varnum decision made it clear it did not pertain to churches, churches do not have to perform same-sex marriages unless they choose to. It only affects the civil realm of our society. How does your argument face that fact?
God is the God of governments. He's the God of individual lives. He's the God of what we teach our children. He's the God of you know, the entire creation. And so you can't say, God, we don't want you anymore. We know better than you regarding marriage. So his ways are designed to do the most benefit for the children that he created and loves. And so to, you know, to poke him in the eye is not wise.
Are there any non-religious arguments against same-sex marriage?
There are hundreds. In fact, we have resources that we've distributed for years, long before Varnum, that describe the familial and economic and social and cultural benefits of having a strong one-man, one-woman marriage culture. Mm-hmm. So, yes, clearly the,
well,
the benefits—
Why is it? Let's just take that. Why is, if you have two parents, why do they have to be of opposite sexes?
The nature of things. You know, God loves us so much that he created male and female, you know, and so for—
But I guess if I was acknowledging your religious argument, but I'm actually trying to go for perhaps a science-based reason why a same-sex couple would not be as good at parenting as a heterosexual couple.
Well, I'll answer that twofold, and I'll try to be brief. First is, you know, God is the God of science. Science is simply trying to determine what is, and so we look at nature, and nature is very clear on what marriage and family is. Second is there are a number of studies, the most recent and the most powerful of which out of the University of Texas shows that, for example, one of the detriments of having children raised by homosexuals is that they are literally 900% more likely to be molested. Now, if we care about children at all, we should definitely be saying this is unhealthy. It's
molested by whom? Are you equating this with pedophilia?
Molested, period. Often in the home, often by boyfriends or people who come into the home. The molestation rate is so devastating. This is sort of the dark underbelly of this whole homosexual advocacy movement, is what's happening to children. And frankly, if we don't care about those kind of increases in molestation, then I have to wonder about our motives.
Okay, I guess I can't verify that study.
You can look it up. It's all over the internet. Mark Regnerus is the guy who did it. He was criticized roundly, but all of his research has been backed up by peer review.
Chuck Hurley with us. He's the president of the Family Policy Center. Jeff Angelo, former Iowa State Senator from 97 to 2009, a Republican, founder of Iowa Republicans for Freedom, a Christian and a conservative, self-described. Jeff, back in 2004, you were a key supporter of a constitutional amendment that would have banned same-sex marriage in Iowa. You changed your mind. What's the story behind that?
Well, I think that, like many Iowans who started out in opposition to same-sex marriage, we talked a lot to our friends and our family about this particular issue, particularly Iowans who are gay, and sat down and talked with them about what their desires were, why they thought marriage was important to them. And often when you're involved in politics, there's a concept that is referred to as the evil others, where a group of people are basically, we describe them in political arguments as wanting to destroy society, wanting to do evil things to society. And a lot of times the argument on this issue has been portrayed as that. And in sitting down with individual Iowans who desired to be married, certainly that kind of argument fell away. Their desire was to set up stable families and to engage in monogamous relationships, just like heterosexuals. And that got me thinking about the positive aspects of same-sex marriage and what Iowans were asking and why they were asking for.
Was there a particular moment when you can say you did a reversal on this?
I don't think there was a particular moment. There was a conversation that was intriguing to me, which was one day I was in a park, and this was during the effort to unseat the Iowa Supreme Court justices who had actually ruled unanimously in favor of Varnum. And there was a gay friend of mine who was handing out brochures to urge people to retain these judges. And we were having a conversation about his thoughts on this issue. And at one point he said, you know, it's great to be a gay man in Iowa. And of course I was taken aback because here was this political debate. Here was he fighting for the retention of these judges. Why in the middle of all of this would he say it was great to be a gay man in Iowa? And I said, well, tell me why you're saying that in the middle of all of this. And he said, oh, Jeff, he said, you know, this political debate doesn't reflect the reality of what's going on in Iowa community. I've always felt welcome. I've always felt comfortable being an Iowan. I've always felt a member of my community. And it really got me thinking because obviously in a representative government, your government should represent what's going on in the individual communities of Iowa or across the nation. And if the political debate actually doesn't reflect what's going on in the communities, then something's wrong with the political system. And that's where I find myself really contemplating a change of heart on this issue.
You are founder of Iowa Republicans for Freedom. What is the mission there pertaining to this topic?
Basically, it is that you can be a conservative and you can advocate for same-sex marriage along the lines of conservative principles, of limited government, forming structurally sound families, of following the golden rule of treating others as you'd like to be treated. And it is a means of saying, yes, you can be a Republican, and yes, you can be conservative, and yes, you can be in favor of same-sex marriage in Iowa.
Jeff Angelo, as a Christian and a conservative who once held the views that you were strong enough in these views that you would have banned same-sex marriage in Iowa, how do you react to Chuck Hurley's arguments we've heard?
Well, I know Chuck, and Chuck is a devout man who's very committed to his religious beliefs. And when I hear Chuck talking about his religious beliefs and what he thinks of God and his role in our lives, I agree almost with everything that he says. But in this particular issue, we do have a theological disagreement. And as you brought up in your comments, the idea of a same-sex couple going to a city hall or to a courthouse to be recognized by their government as married is outside of the religious realm. It is a church is not being forced to marry a same-sex couple if they wish, and I don't want the government making theological decisions and embedding them in the law for me. So I completely respect his religious beliefs and a lot of the things that he said about God and God's role in our lives, but we do have a theological disagreement on this particular issue.
Jeff Angelo with us, founder of Republicans for Freedom. Chuck Hurley with us, president of the Family Policy Center. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. We're going to try to feed in a number of brief comments, questions from callers as we get to them. Our hour is quickly evaporating, though. You can also leave a comment on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page because it's clear that we may not get to all of them. Let's go to our phones. Steve is with us in Des Moines. What do you make of the marking of this fifth-year anniversary? What's on your mind, Steve?
Well, I'm a Christian, and God created marriage. It doesn't matter what you think or what I think or what anybody thinks about marriage. The only thing that matters is what God thinks about it. And if anybody with half a brain can read the Bible and understand what God's opinion is about marriage. But apart from that, take the case of the photographer in New Mexico or the baker, you know, the wedding cakes in Oregon, where they opted to not provide their services to gay marriages, and they were taken to the cleaners for it. Why is that right?
Well, because they were denying service to people, and I think the courts in those, I can't quote that. I don't know, Bruce Gronbach, if you're still there, if you know the reason, the judicial reason behind that.
No, I don't, because I don't know those cases. Sorry.
Okay. I guess I can't speak to that specifically, Steve, but I guess we take your points. We've got other callers on the line. Patricia is with us from Des Moines. Hi, Patricia.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call, and I'd just like to celebrate this anniversary and say congratulations and thank you to the Farnhams and their families and all the courage they showed. The comment I have is in relation to a conversation you had yesterday with Danny Carroll from the Family Leader, and he made a statement that marriage is between a biological mother and father. Based in biology, and that is the only legitimate family. And I'm an adoptive parent, and I also support other forms of families. And it kind of made me wonder, by having such a strict definition of family, that it's a biological parents, whether the opponents of gay marriage are so stuck in a very limited and restrictive idea of what humanity is and who is human and who is, who is equal. So the fact that they would even deny me as an adoptive parent as, being a legitimate family, I have to wonder, was that really a slip of the tongue that he made yesterday?
I think you're confusing me with my colleague, Clay Masters. I think he had the conversation
okay.
with
– Well,
our voices are very similar, but
point
taken, Patricia. We're going to move on. We have a number of callers and a couple of other things as the hour winds down here. Chuck Hurley and Jeff Angelo, I'd like to have you react to this. Iowa Public Radio political science analyst Dennis Goldford, who also joins us along with Bruce on Wednesdays of Drake University, could not join us today on the program. He offered this prediction on how the issue of same-sex marriage may come into play after this fall's elections. Let's listen to Dennis Goldford of Drake University.
The subterranean or under-the-radar issue, I think, in this fall's Iowa elections, amidst all the hullabaloo over congressional seats and senatorial seats and gubernatorial seats, is the control of the Iowa Senate. And control of the Iowa Senate, currently in Democratic hands by a 26-24 margin, is crucial for people who want to overturn the Varnum decision. It's not likely, absent some political earthquake, that the Democrats will recapture the Iowa House this year. If they can control and maintain control of the Iowa Senate, they'll prevent a vote on a proposed constitutional amendment to overturn the Varnum decision. If, however, Republicans gain control of the Iowa Senate and control both the Iowa Senate and the Iowa House, then it's a pretty good bet that one of their first concerns will be to pass a proposed constitutional amendment to overturn the Varnum decision. That proposal would have to be passed in two consecutive state legislatures, so the people elected in 14 would do it the first time if Republicans have control of both houses, and if they maintain that control in 2016, they'd pass it again. And then it would go on the ballot for the voters in 2018. So it's a long process. But that's very much of a concern in this fall's elections, control of the Iowa Senate, both for people who oppose the Varnum decision and for people who want to safeguard the Varnum decision.
Dennis Goldfert couldn't be with us. We recorded that comment from him. Chuck Hurley, is that the path that you're looking for in your work with the Family Policy Center to overturn Varnum, the one described there by Dennis Goldfert?
Three things quickly, Ben, and thanks for having me on here. First is certainly political races and control of a legislative chamber is important for moving legislation, but a much bigger issue is the mood of the people. Abe Lincoln, you know, said you can't get anything done without the people being with you in a representative form of government, and Jeff Angelo rightly acknowledged that earlier. So I would say that the timing on any dealing with Varnum in the legislature will depend more on the mood of Iowans than on control of a chamber or two. Mm-hmm. Second is my greatest concern about this is that while this is being celebrated and held up as legal, this nanosecond in history when we're having an experiment, a radical experiment at the expense of children with homosexual quote-unquote marriage, is that over 500,000 impressionable school children each year in Iowa are being taught that this is somehow okay. And again, my concern is for people's bodies as well as their souls. And Jesus was very clear. He said, if you lead a child into sin, it's better to have a millstone hung around your neck and be thrown into the sea. And so by us celebrating and legalizing something that God has called sin, what we're doing is jeopardizing our own well-being. And more importantly, we're leading children into sinful behavior. And that's the greatest damage.
Just briefly, because I want to get to Jeff Angelo and also to Bruce here before the hour ends. It sounds like you have no doubt that Varnum will in some way be overturned.
Well, you know, fads come and go, and this is clearly a fad if you look at human history. And so, yes, if the earth remains for very much longer, certainly this fad will go.
Jeff Angelo, I want to get you in here. Sorry to cut you off, Chuck, but we've got limited time. Jeff Angelo, react to that or look at how you see that political path developing. You're working against that.
Yeah, I don't believe I am a Republican. I would like to see the Republicans take control of the Iowa Senate. I do not believe that Varnum will be reversed legislatively because you point to the numbers that were referred to a little bit earlier in the hour by J. Ann Selzer, the pollster. This is not an issue that passionately moves people anymore. And so I think we're moving on to other issues of job creation, health care, immigration. I do not believe this is an issue that people will be demanding that their legislators address in the future.
Okay. Bruce Grinebeck, can you round off the hour with some concluding remarks here? And I want to mention, too, we have so many callers and other comments we didn't get to. Please go to our Facebook page and register your opinion. So many good callers and opinions we didn't hear. Bruce.
Yeah, I think Jeff puts his finger on something very important, which is that social attitudes are changing. I think an important factor we haven't mentioned are the number of gays who began to come out of the closet, and you began to realize that they were surrounded by people you had no idea were that kind of person. Your best friend's daughter or your boss's son, and you began to have conversations, as Damon was talking about in the first half of the show, and began to understand other aspects of the humanity of the people that they were being concerned with, and they weren't all crazy people riding bicycles naked in San Francisco. And I think that's the social shift that became part of the gay movement to take a more important place in society will make the reversal of that decision extremely difficult.
Bruce Grinebeck of the University of Iowa, thank you for joining us, along with Jeff Angelo, founder of Iowa Republicans for Freedom, and Chuck Hurley, president of the Family Policy Center. Thank you all for participating in this hour, Chuck, Jeff, and Bruce.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow on this program, it's a News Buzz edition. We'll hope to speak with former University of Iowa President David Skorton. He's to become the Secretary of the Smithsonian Institute next year. Also, a preview of the speaker's plan to be at this weekend's Mission Creek Tech Conference to be held in Iowa City. We'll hope you'll join us for a News Buzz edition of River to River. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. It's a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Our executive producer, Catherine Perkins. Thanks for joining us.